This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 209 for Wednesday, September 28th, 2016. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. We cover everything from movies and television to books, apps, and websites. Joining me tonight, Brockett Vola is back, and he has internet. Hello.
Hooray! I have internet. Before, it was all smoke signals you were hearing me through.
Yes, SOS and, you know, Morse code and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm.
Yep. It was a surrogate voice. Yep. Now it's my real voice. So, sad part is they sound just as bad.
So for those of you that are wondering, we missed last week because literally minutes before Brockett and I were set to sit down and record, a tree fell in his backyard and cut off his internet. And I didn't have enough time to figure out a backup plan. So I had a lot on my plate. And as you can tell, possibly by my voice, I'm getting over the flu. So it was a good time to take a break for everybody involved.
Getting over it or getting right in that special spot?
No, that was this weekend. Unfortunately, bummer. I mean, I'm not shy about mentioning that I have a part-time job on weekends. And in the thick of a sinus cold, I had to be talking to people all weekend long. So come Sunday, I should have been recording supervillain voices for cartoons because it was special. I'm still not feeling fantastic. The sinus thing knocked me on my butt. I had to bow out of Comics Coast to Coast on Thursday. And then I fell really far behind on all my work that I've been doing. And then, so this week has just been catch up. So I should still be resting, but instead I'm putting in long hours. So I've got this delicate balance I'm trying to maintain. But nice. I did okay on Comics Coast to Coast last night. We did a makeup episode with Jack Slade on the show. So that was fun. And then we've got another one tomorrow night. So it's going to be a 3-podcast week this week for me. So I'm putting the vocal cords through their paces.
Whoa, Mr. Big Shot over here. Yeah, 3 podcasts right. A week.
It's funny, you know, like whenever I'm so used to having 2 shows, you know, I do Wednesdays and Thursdays and that's normally it. And I'm heavily involved in both. Like I'm producing and there's post-show or pre-show stuff that has to happen all around the board. But whenever I do 3 podcasts in a week, even if I'm just guesting on a third, it just reminds me, like, I just don't know how people do it if they do more than 3 shows. Because unless it's your profession, like if this is something that you can actually say, no, I'm getting paid to do this, this is my job, then I don't know how people do it. Like it sucks up so much of your free time.
Right. Well, I mean, some of those people, probably half daily podcast hosts, don't have to edit their own stuff. Maybe not half. I'm probably underestimating that. But still, 35% of them probably don't have to do it. Or if they do, they don't have to do edits. I mean, like I listen to a lot of podcasts. I'm like, this is a professional podcast. And I can tell they didn't really edit it. They just like ran through it, fumbled through whatever their notes were, small talk through it, and then just rolled it out. And then, you know, but the thing is, like, at this point, you know, with the internet and everything like that, nobody really cares about perfectly edited stuff. Although, you know,
I prefer
the rise of the YouTubers, but
yeah, I prefer the live to hard drive podcast. Part of the reason why I'm drawn to podcasts and why I got into it in the first place is because it isn't this, you know, overly enunciated, scripted newscast, you know, and it has fumbles, it has funny moments. Even on a serious show, there's still an interjection of humor is usually welcome. The shows mm-hmm. I listen to anyway. I'll cite Daily Tech News Show. It's not somber topics, but it's serious journalism. But they still joke around a lot on the show. And, you know, like people fumble reading headlines and they laugh about it. And it becomes an in-joke sometimes. Like that kind of stuff is what I think I like so much about podcasting. I have tried to listen to other podcasts that are very, very popular. And I found that they're way too much like terrestrial radio. And it's like, well, it's not a podcast. If I wanted to listen to this, I would just tune in on a radio and listen. And so I don't
How
like
dare
that
you,
kind of
sir?
Stuff.
What do you think, Mr. Monkey?
Yeah,
I agree with that. Morning Zoo, we're coming right back at you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
right.
I understand.
And too many bumpers. I mean, it's one of the things that I've not been into is putting bumpers in my show. I mean, I've got intro music and outro music, but that's it. And if I had a soundboard, maybe, but it really would depend on if it was.
That'd be so amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I can appreciate stingers and stuff like that when you want to separate sections. The Instance is a show that I've been listening to for a long time, and they have some long standing bumpers that they use to separate things from news, listener email, that sort of stuff. And it's funny, like I didn't realize it until I started paying attention recently, because I've been listening to the show more often, and that is that it really does give you just like a 2 or 3 second breath to be like, all right, they're done with the jib jab, and now they're actually going to talk about some news. And it's just this little mental etch-a-sketch to kind of like, okay, previous conversation done, new conversation starting. And for that kind of stuff, I'm fine with. But I find that like some of the other stingers, especially on shows that are not, we'll say not as professional as others, I find that some people overuse them.
How dare you, sir?
I know.
How dare you? I think my segues between segments have gotten really pathetic. Usually there's one briefly after 5 minutes of conversation, then an hour of talk, and then briefly before 5 minute outro. But we used to be very good. We actually got an email once when I went straight to the version you were talking about, where we just went pure. I got the episodes up faster that way. But then we're like, well, we missed the bumpers. Well, you know, then they stopped it so I could put pictures and make it so you could literally skip to chapters. I could put chapter marks in it.
Yep.
And now all that crap's gone. So it's like, well, what the hell's the point? But,
yeah.
You know.
Oh, it's not gone. I'm still using a very old version of GarageBand.
Me too.
You know, I just, it works. It's not broken, so I'm not fixing it. Or actually, I have both. I've got both versions, but I do the podcasting edits on another one, because the MP4, I'm not sure if people know this, but like if you're listening on something like Downcast and you happen to have your screen viewable while you're watching the show, the artwork for each episode will show up on your phone. So if you've got your phone locked and you go to, you know, pause the episode or something like that, you should be looking at the episode artwork for 209, 208, 207.
Yeah.
And you can skip to chapters. I don't really break up the main show, but you can certainly skip through the intro music and the outro music if you want. You can skip to the end where there's bumpers. Like there's a couple of spots where you can bump around. And there's usually a link to the show notes that you can click right on your phone and it'll take you to a browser and show you the link. So if you're on a mobile device and you're, you know, well, what's that link that Joel just mentioned? Chances are it's going to be in the show notes and you can probably get to it through your podcast app.
Ugh,
but that requires an MP4, you know, so...
Jeez.
Yeah, I know, right?
MP4 technology. So you sound like somebody who doesn't want earbud jacks in your phones anymore. How dare you? You're filthy.
Yeah. Well, one thing that I have been doing lately is digging into a lot of dirt in World of Warcraft, and I finally hit 100 on my mage, which is ironically not my main character. It's a second character that I boosted to 90 to play with friends. On a separate server from my main character. And it's kind of funny that I hit 100 with that character first. But it didn't really take that long because with the new expansion coming out, they're kind of accelerating the leveling process to get everybody up to the new content because they want everybody to buy the new expansion.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really on the cusp. I really want to. I have too many work responsibilities right now to allow myself to do that. So I'm going to level my other character, my 94 main character as a paladin, up to 100, but it's not as exciting as if I had the new expansion. If I had the new expansion, I'm fearful I would be spending a little bit too much time in it. So I'm being a responsible adult, and I'm gonna stave off on that for now. But I'm gonna keep my subscription up because I have really been enjoying the stories and stuff like that. But as a result, I haven't really watched a variety of stuff for what we've been watching. So I, you know, it's just been straight up, you know, a little bit of free time playing Warcraft and a little bit of time watching Netflix. And I've just been going through one particular series. So I had to make any decisions or veer from the current path. So my downtime has been nice just because there's been no decisions to make. It's like, I just have to decide, do I want to play Warcraft or do I want to watch Netflix? And once right. I'm there, it's just like, it's the one video game I'm playing or it's the one show that I'm watching right now. So it's been pretty straightforward. The other bit of news, which is new today, is I installed Grobot on the Citadel Cafe general community Patreon Slack chat, which has a really long name. I'm going to just call it the Slack chat from now on. Grobot is a chatbot, and I heard about it on the Daily Tech News show. Veronica Belmont, who is a co-host on that show on Mondays, she works with Grobot, and they were talking a little bit more about it on Monday's show, and I just got curious about it. So what it is, it's a chatbot that will distribute accolades for good stuff. So, I mean, it's meant for, you know, community building within your work environment. If, you know, hey, thanks, Bob, for fixing the bug on the website. And then Bob gets like a high five from Grobot and a point saying like, hey, Bob, got a thank you. And so it's a little bit of a gamification of positive work environment stuff. But there's a lot of that kind of thing that happens in the Slack chat for the Citadel Cafe. Lots of people are just sharing cool links or, you know, congratulating people or recommending, you know, authors or books or just the kind of stuff that we're into. And every once in a while, someone's like, oh, cool, thanks. Or hey, high five or props to whoever. So I thought, well, I'm going to give this Grobot thing a try. So if you're curious about it, it's in the Slack chat. So if you're a patron for the show and you have access to the Slack chat, then pop on by, check out the Grobot, and just kind of see what's up. And then the next time that someone does something cool in the Slack chat, don't be shy about sending them a thank you or a props or a cheers. There's a number of keywords. I have to edit them. Apparently, I've got more control over this than I realized, but I haven't had the time. But it's pretty cool. I'm enjoying it. It's a fun little thing to experiment with in the Slack chat. So that's what I've been up to really this week. You said that you had some big stuff coming for you in October.
Oh yeah. Well, I work on last October. I just started doing this candy of the day in October, and every day of last October, I would mention a candy and I would eat it and rate it, and the ratings were everything from legitimate to just goofy or whatever. And I had some pretty good reception from my friends. I had quite a few friends that were like, hey, you know, like, this is really fun, like, I like to read those, like, I look forward to reading them on your posts or whatever. You should put them together like a little booklet or something like that. So I'm gonna try and do another full October of a candy every day. So you can find me on Facebook. Again, another reason why, if I had an active Twitter, it'd be really nice to do that. But and going back to your podcast thing, I was like, well, what if I did like a podcast of my candy of the day? But they're really just supposed to be about a paragraph. I mean, they're literally bite-sized, like little bits with, legitimate my thoughts on a candy. But sometimes my mind wanders when thinking about the candy. So then I've done like some of the major ones, and there's a few major ones left. But yeah, so I'm really looking forward to doing that. I would love at some point to, and I'll have to pick your brain sometime about if, you know, putting together like a little, like, you know, just a small, almost index card size, like major, like, you know, like more like a 5x7 type of thing. I'm just like putting it together because I was like, you know what, I could see like maybe getting some, because we have a lot of cute local shops that sell local stuff, like artists and things like that. And like, I think, you know, a candy of the day book could very easily be thrown on somebody's coffee table and collect dust for somebody for years and years and years. So I've been thinking about like trying to put that together and that sort of thing. And just trying to, you know, it'd be a cute little, I think there'd be cute gifts or whatever. And it just make me feel good to try and get something I've been working on writing wise out there. And so in the meantime, I'll be doing that for October starting on Saturday. So it's really tough to start something on a weekend.
Yeah.
When you're used to the grind of the work day. But I've already got, excuse me, I've already got a few suggestions and just looking forward to it. It's also fun for me because I'm not a huge candy person, which is funny because I'm choosing to do this. But like, part of it is the sense of like, I just, you know, when I go for candy, I'm just like, okay, I'll just have some candy now, or in certain circumstances, I'm like constantly like wanting different candies. So I'm a little bit more adventurous. I'm not going to be like super snooty about it. And candy just feels like one of the areas that feels, it's not safe. I've had some really awful candies.
yeah.
But yeah, it's just, it's interesting. It's definitely been fun to do. And candy like cereal, I've found, although cereal is much more difficult in general to perform a cereal of the day. But if you do, let me know. We can be sister buddy of the day things. But anyway, like candy's just a simple thing, and like almost everybody's had exposure with candy. And almost everybody, even if they don't have a sweet tooth, will be like, you know, I could go for this candy, this grabbable candy. And it's literally everything from, I did candy corn last year, I did, you know, the Snickers and the Kit Kats, but then I did like Blackjack gum, which is licorice gum, whatchamacallit, you know, that sort of thing. So like all over the place. So it'd be fun.
Are you going to be doing different candies this year than you did last year?
Yeah. So no repeats, which is already difficult because people have already suggested ones I've done before. And that's part of the reason why I was like, you know, if I put together like a website and then people could check, but then it's like, well, I don't want to do a candy of the day, like 356, you know, days out of the year. And it's Halloween, you know, October, people start to think about candy. So I feel like it's a good time of the year to do it. And, you know, so like I've just been doing it on Facebook, like I said, as my status every day, I'll usually do it. Nice. And yeah, so I have done quite a few of the classic ones. And as is my need at all times, at the end of it, I ranked them all. Have to have things in a link list. Yeah,
what was your number one last year?
My number one last year was Milky Way Midnight. That's probably my favorite.
So it sounds like a dark chocolate Milky Way.
It's a dark chocolate Milky Way with white nougat, which is essentially, I would say, just a slightly sweeter nougat, which I think goes really well with the very semi-sweet chocolate, because milk chocolate naturally has a little bit more sweetness to it. And, you know, they say milk chocolate has lost a little bit of the quote-unquote healthier properties of regular dark chocolate. But, you know, and then it has what they call golden caramel, which to me, again, doesn't mean anything. I think it's just slightly more gold, but it's delicious. That was probably my favorite, which is funny because I think regular Milky Way would not be my top five, but there's something about the Milky Way Midnight that pushed it up there. So, and I, of course, admitted that I think Snickers was my number three. Oh, yeah, I think it was Milky Way Midnight, Nerds Rope was number two, and Snickers was number three. So
I'm not a candy guy. I like chocolate well enough, but it's not something I go for all the time. I'm a peanut M&M guy. If you were to say, you know, kind of gut reaction, what candy do you want all the time? You know, that's my movie snack. Like, that's the kind of thing that I want. They're ridiculously expensive. They always have been, but in recent years and months, they've just been kind of inaccessible in terms of, like, when you look at it and go, wow, that's an $8 bag of candy. And it's, granted, I know it's a big bag of candy, but it's not that big. You know, like we're not talking about feeding, you know, an entire party. We're talking about, this is going to last about an hour. You know, like,
yeah, exactly.
You know, in a group, you know, in a group setting, you're like, well, that's awful. So I haven't had M&Ms in a while. Actually, I was out when I went out to see Star Trek Beyond with my sister. I decided against getting M&Ms, and I picked up, I can't remember what I picked up. I picked up something else. Cookies. There were a dozen and a half M&M chocolate chip cookies in the bakery of the supermarket for $4. So,
nice.
So I grabbed those instead. So I kind of got my fix that way. But long story short, where was I going with this? M&M's, movies, expensive. I lost my train of thought. Anyway. It was just too much money. For that kind of stuff.
Right.
Yeah. And this kind of illustrates my point, is that I am more of a baked goods guy. I don't like sugar candies, and I'm not a big, fudge is okay. I mean, every once in a while, but it's more of a, you know, once in a blue moon sort of thing. So, but for me, like, I probably have a chocolate chip cookie at some point during the week, you know, like it just, it's, Baked goods for me are my sweet tooth. I don't have I certainly don't like gummy candies. All that kind of stuff is usually not my bag. So it's always interesting that there's so much candy out there. And I know people that really like candy, and then they don't like chocolate, or they prefer candy over salty stuff like chips and peanuts and things.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. I think the thing that is interesting about it is it goes from the handful candies. Like, some people are like, I don't really like candy. But like, if you literally give them a fun size of a candy bar, that's perfect. Like, it's a perfect, it's all in proportion to things. So you get your giant, you know, I think it's anywhere from 8 to 5 ounce, almost Ziploc bags of the M&Ms. Like, that's essentially, for some people, that's like, you know, they'll just destroy that over like a couple days, or even a movie shared with people. But then other people, like, I've seen the people who get like the general bags of M&Ms and then like eat like 4 or 5 and then fold it over to save for later. And it's like, you know, and that's the interesting part about, just it generally, at first I was like, I'll just stick to kind of candy bars, because bars are very, like, generally speaking, even in a bar form, things that are in a full log are at least broken up into a portion that looks the same size. So then you get a proportional thing. But then it just became a point where it's like, it doesn't make any sense to not talk about candy corn or circus peanuts or, you know, these different types of things. And, you know, when it just boils down to is, I just wanted to talk about interesting ones that I either had strong opinions about, such as the idea that Score and Heath bars are different. And I really, 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 really disagree with that, because I looked at the ingredients exactly and there was only one slight difference. And if you bite into both back and forth as I did, and then mixed up the wrappers and did it again, I still could not tell the difference. Other than of trying to force myself to find something, which was Heath was slightly more buttery in the toffee portion. So, and people like sports. Somehow people get very possessive because candies come into their life at a young age. And it's always fun to have the people who are like, yes. And then, of course, the people who are like, this is horrible. Why would you ever say that? Stay away from my candy corn. And I'm like, that's perfectly fine, because they're not making any more of it. It's been around for years and they keep selling it because nobody's sold out of it. It's just garbage. They keep shoveling it out of the same tub they made 50 years ago and they haven't sold out of it. So it's just trash. Trash.
Sounds like you're quite the candy connoisseur now.
Well, at this point, I've developed strong enough opinions that, I don't really care to like overindulge in candy, but I've revved up for this time of year this time. And in these last couple of years, my wife loves Halloween. So as I've gotten into more of the October spirit, I put together my Spotify playlist. And I try and see some scary movies that, of course, will freak me out for the rest of the year. And that's all I need, is just one or two that's going to literally scare the bejesus out of me, because I don't do well with horror films. And then I'm good. I'm set. Like, that's what I'm going for. So I would love suggestions of a horror film or good horror music. I'm always looking for that to sort of fill out my October.
Well, I can tell you what is very scary for me right now is that the peanut butter M&M's extra, extra large bag on Amazon.ca is 1,417.5 grams. It's a 50-ounce bag. It goes for a mere $49.70 Canadian.
Nice.
It's a 50. I would rather buy a bottle of scotch for probably $4 less than buy that bag of M&M's.
That's like sandbags filled with
ridiculous. Who would want to do that to their mailman? Really? I don't know. Kilogram and a half. Like that's getting up there. That's like 3 pounds.
That's a lot.
Yeah. That's crazy. Anyway, what have you been watching, in the last little while leading up to tonight's show?
So I was jazzed and have been jazzed to try and talk about Gravity Falls, which was a Disney DX show. It's only been 2 seasons. If he ever listened to the show, which he probably won't because he's not on it, Dan Hall, my friend, referred it to me because I was starting to watch Rick and Morty season one. Mm-hmm. And he was like, Gravity Falls is Rick and Morty, but if it was done by Disney and without all the like explicitly dark adult humor. And I was like, I don't really understand. But like Gravity Falls is essentially sort of like Harry Indiana, touches of like, it's not the Twilight Zone because it's not a new story every week, but it's the wacky town where wacky things happen and there's some kids and they're going to try and figure out what happened in this town. And then you have a whole cast of funky characters. You have Dipper Pines and his sister Mabel Pines, which are voiced by Jason Ritter and Kristen Schaal. And most likely you would recognize Kristen Schaal's voice immediately, especially if you're a fan of Bob's Burgers. But in general, she shows up in tons and tons of stuff. She's the voice of Louise, the pink bunny ear-wearing daughter on Bob's Burgers. And she's in live action. She's in The Last Man on Earth with...
I know who she is, yes.
Yeah, Will Forte. Yeah. So anyway, so she plays the sister, and they come to visit their grunkle, which is a grand uncle, Pines.
Nice.
And I call him Grunkle Pines or Grunkle Stan. So he's Stan Pines, and he runs the Mystery Shack, which is funny because almost immediately the ass falls off the shack part of it, and it just says Mystery Hack, which is essentially what he is. He's this guy who put together a Ripley's Believe It or Not type gallery of garbage and is trying to sell, you know, tickets to come see his cadre of wacky and weird. But right. at the same time, Dipper Pines finds this mysterious journal, which details all these mysterious things that happen in Gravity Falls. And then wackiness ensues for these characters. And there's all, like any great show that you love, the side cast is just as vibrant and interesting as the main cast. The creator of the show, as is, it's sort of one of the big things now, is the voice of Stan Pine. So it still gives me hope that if I ever created a show, I could also be a character in my show, which would be phenomenal. And I know that's been a dream of Kyle's, Ferguson's for a while. But anyway, he's the voice of Stan, but then amongst there's tons of little guests, like Nathan Fillion from Firefly fame and Castle fame has also been like small voices, and like Larry King had a brief moment as a wax head figure of himself, and Will Forte does it, and like there's tons of little voice actors. Of course, people you would recognize are also big voices in it. Generally speaking, I would say don't look who's in it though, because it's one of those shows where it's fun to hear, oh, this thing happened or this person, you know. But like a lot of voices you recognize, you know, the Mark Hamills of the world. Some of these people kind of leak into the show in different small voice acting parts. So, and it's literally for all ages. Like there's very few shows that I can see where I'm like I watched for Biggest Fan, My Little Pony Friendship is Magic, which I did actually enjoy. I didn't feel that it was necessary to create an entire culture around it, but It was interesting to watch it and see the layers. You know, you can see the layers of like, here's a joke that lands on two levels and that sort of stuff. And
right.
And there was and the messages for children. But so the show obviously has, you know, lessons. But then there's also episodes that weren't really lessons. They're just entertainment, or they're just episodes that are just kind of like, oh, that's kind of a cool sci-fi thing. So I think it has a really good balance with all that sort of stuff. So I really enjoyed it. I think the opening theme song is super addictive. It's on Spotify, so I can listen to it whenever I want to. And it's just really fun that way.
I got a question before you go on. I'm noticing on IMDb, it's listed with a bunch of other things that people liked: Adventure Time, Over the Garden Wall, and Steven Universe. Mm-hmm. So I've heard good things about Over the Garden Wall and Steven Universe. I haven't seen either. I tried to watch Adventure Time, but I just couldn't get into it. It's not a bad show. It's just not my show. Mm-hmm. And I classify it with Snapchat. Like, I understand that it's out there and that's a thing, but I don't really care.
Right.
So, like, if I'm not a fan of Adventure Time, is Gravity Falls kind of more in my wheelhouse or less?
Excellent question. Of all those things, from what I know, and I don't know Over the Garden Wall, Steven Universe is also recommended by my friend Dan Hall, but the way he describes that is a little bit more screwball and very high concept. I've seen Adventure Time enough, also because of biggest fan of Adventure Time, that it has, like, I like Adventure Time. It's fun, but it definitely is its own thing. It is weird. Gravity Falls is this pretty much straightforward, like, I want to say, golden age, like, DuckTales was just a great solid show because it was like, here's the adventure, here's the characters we love. Right. But instead of it being a globe-trotting show, it's literally just all focused in one town. So you end up having a lot more repeat characters, which in the modern age of storytelling is fascinating for a children's show. Again, only two seasons. They committed to two seasons, which is, if you think about it, is pretty outrageous for a quote-unquote successful children's show, which means that they have a beginning, middle, and end pretty much for the whole series. And not only that, but because it's all in one town, like, you get to learn, like, it's essentially like Twin Peaks, like some of these other great shows, but it's for all ages. It's for children. And I really, really think, and I hate doing this because it's like your friend that gives you a book that tells you it's really awesome and then you immediately put it down and never pick it up. But I really think if you do check it out, Joel, it is one of those things where I think the first three or four episodes, it's very much like, okay, this is fine. But I think it was around, and this usually happens, you tell anybody this, but around episode five or four, when you get into sort of like this, okay, this is what we're doing with the series. And it's just an easy show. I could really see you putting this on, probably getting through half of the first season with it on the background. But then there's going to come a point where I think you're going to, like, all of a sudden catch you, like, not paying attention to what you're doing and just watching the show. And then that sort of happened for me. And then eventually you will just put it on to watch it. And because at that point you're invested now in this small town and these characters. So I hope that happens. I definitely hope you at least see enough of it to see the character that I'm most excited about from the series, which the worst part is I can't really tell you about the character you drew called Bill Cipher, because that sort of messes up the fun of Bill Cipher. But I will tell you that it is a very interesting character, and I really love the simplicity of the design. And I would recommend, maybe, I know I think I tagged an image search of him, but yep. If it's just the one picture, that's fine. But if you Google image search him in general, it's going to give away a little bit more about him.
Well, and I've already had a lot given away, because in order to do that commission at Spring Equinox earlier this year, I had to look up both characters. And what surprised me, it was surprising and then not surprising all at the same time, is that Bill Cipher and this other character, I don't remember who it is, it's actually from a video game, I think. Mm-hmm. And they're both floating triangles. Both the characters that I did in this commission, I know it's on my Instagram. If you go back to somewhere around end of April, you'll probably find it. But it's this Bill Cipher character with a gun and this other character that's a white triangle with a single eye in the middle that has also has a gun and is throwing money around. And I don't remember that character's name, but I had to do Google image search for both characters. And then the guy that commissioned me, he was an animator, and he said, do an image search for both of them together, because people draw them together all the time. And they've got nothing to do with one another other than the fact that these two separate media entities, like this TV show and the video game, both have characters that are floating triangles with like stick arms and legs. And yeah, I was like, exactly. Okay. So I looked it up. So I've seen some pretty hairy looking images of Bill Cipher with like pyramids and like flames. And a lot of times he looks like a bad guy and there's all this kind of stuff. And then the other guy, I couldn't really get a handle on the character of the other triangle that I had to draw, but he struck me as kind of a dick. Like he just wasn't a very nice, kind of an asshole, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I thought it was kind of interesting to kind of see them against one another. But it's weird. Stuff like this is always, we're like, you know, I can appreciate the character design and the show design for Gravity Falls. And but then when I see stuff that's so popular, like this Bill Slifer, I'm just like, meh. Like, that, that's not going to get me to watch the show. Like, hey, come watch the show. It's got Bill Slifer in it. And you show me like a stick figure drawing of a pyramid. I was like, yeah, no, not really my thing.
Right.
But looking at the other characters, like the round eyes and the way that they've, you know, the cartoons and the way that they're expressing themselves in other images from the show. I can't remember. What are the names of the main characters?
Dipper and Mabel Pines.
Right. So Dipper and Mabel, like those character designs are appealing and they look like they've got some fun ways of doing stuff. And like that kind of thing is it's a little bit more my speed. I thought Gravity Falls was a camp.
No, it is the city.
I might be getting it confused with another show. I think there's another kid show called Camp something.
There might be something with falls in it. I will say I do know the design of stuff. There is an absolutely plausible and important reason why Bill Cipher looks the way he does.
Okay.
I just say that. So there's a reason why these characters look certain ways and Bill Cipher is designed to, and I will say, like, having watched the show, Bill Cipher now is like on my list of tattoos. Like, I've thought about it and like, I really want the Deathly Hallows, which is the circle, the triangle and the line, you know, from Harry Potter. Mm. And I know that's really popular, but I thought, because it's a triangle and then a circle and a line, like that kind of looks like an eye to mirror it in another part of my body. So obviously on both testicles, what I'm going to do is, I thought about doing Bill Cipher and literally it just being his triangle body, no arms or legs, but then the tiny little top hat. So you have his eyeball, his bow tie and his little hat. And then I have two triangles that are mirroring each other, but for two very different nerdy loves of my life. So, and that's, so it's interesting that you pointed out how like it's very simplistic, because what I loved most, I think, about particularly that character is the simplicity of the way he's designed. But and I would love to dress as Grunkle Stan for Halloween, but I think Laura and I are going to go as Groot and Rocket Raccoon. So
nice.
But in the back pocket of mine, very simple but fun costume for Grunkle Stan with his little Mystery Shack ensemble with his little suit, his eye patch over his glasses, and his little fez hat is another like fun, just small things. There's small things about the show that are very enjoyable, small callbacks they make, things that kids might not necessarily pick up on, although kids are very smart. But there's definitely not like, it's not double entendres that are being thrown around that adults are going to pick up on. It's more of like the nuances of, they just told a story about conspiracies and things like that. And obviously some of the jokes in the background were conspiracies known throughout time. And like children will pick up on stuff, but they're not going to know like, oh, it's obviously a big deal. The idea of the lone gunman or the magic bullet or those types of things necessarily. Right. So it's more like a nerd higher level of information than like, oh, socially I'm not prepared for these things. So really fun. Only two seasons. If you can check out that song, at least the opening credits kind of gives you an idea of it. And it's just, I think with really great golden age or even common age cartoons, like if the credits get you on board, like it's just one of those things like Stranger Things right now, like those credits, like don't tell you anything about the series, but if you watch those credits, you're going to be like, I'm kind of into the show. I think this is no different. Like just like DuckTales, that like theme song, that opening told you everything you need to know about the show, got you excited for it. And you're ready to go with Uncle Scrooge. And that's no different than Dipper, Mabel and Stan Pines.
Right on. Yeah. I'll have to look it up because this is at least between, you know, you first mentioning it to me, to talk about it on the show and a couple other instances. I think this is the third time in a month that someone has told me to check it out. So all from different walks. Like it's friends from outside of art, it's friends that are inside art, and then it's other podcasters. Like, so it's all kind of different appreciations, like people that are coming at it from different standpoints. Mm-hmm. So I'll have to check it out. I know I'll have to at least do some homework because I'm coming into con season and there's usually a lot of requests for fan art. Like people say, hey, can you draw Steven from Steven Universe? I'm like, sure, if I knew who that was.
Oh, 100%.
And so then I have to go look it up. But if I've at least seen a couple of episodes, it educates my drawing that much more, you know, rather than sitting there at my table trying to watch a YouTube video, trying to figure out what the hell this character is like, you know?
Oh, quick word of warning. I tried to give you a better link for the intro. Be very careful because there is a different intro for the show, and I would not watch that. It just says Weirdmageddon. Don't watch that intro. If it says that it's part of the intro, do not watch that. You want the straight, clean Gravity Falls intro.
Right. So I think I found the other intro. I don't remember if I watched it or not. If I did, I didn't pay that close attention. But what I did notice is that there's a lot of video shares and a lot of people reacting to it. So I was like, okay, whatever. It's basically a bunch of 13-year-olds posting their reaction to an alternative opening to the show. And they were like losing their minds. Speaking of opening to the shows and how it can make or break a series.
Ooh, segue, best in business.
I loathe this song for Star Trek Enterprise. It's awful. And I actually enjoyed this show. I've now finished season two, and I mentioned this on the show before that the Rod Stewart opening for Enterprise is terrible, and Lou agreed with me. But it is like breaking my heart. It's even though I skip it every time, I fast forward the 2 minutes and 20 seconds to get through the song at the beginning of the show. You're not always perfect. So those last couple bars, every third show I miss up and I end up listening to that last, note from the song. And oh my God, it's terrible. Even the outro music would be fine. Like the little cheesy kind of orchestral score that they have. I don't know why they couldn't have gone with just a classic Star Trek, opening. When I watch the show now, I'm excited to sit down and watch another episode of Enterprise. The second season really picked up and I've been enjoying it a lot more. But I still am nostalgic for the way that The Next Generation opened with just the silence of space and then like the use of the Voyagers of the Starship Enterprise, like the speech and then a bunch of warp stuff happening. Like I kind of miss that,
Yeah.
And they could have done something very similar with this show. I like the visuals of the opening, but it's the music that just kills me. It's so cheesy. It's very 90s for a show that was made in 2005.
You nailed it, because did you know that apparently the song is called Faith of the Heart, and it is the theme is a cover of a Rod Stewart single by the same name. And that song originally appeared for the first time in 1998 for the Patch Adams soundtrack. Very interesting choice when you have Jerry Goldsmith, legendary composer, and he was rumored to be involved, and then they don't get him, and they get this theme. Wow, interesting.
Yeah.
Is it like Firefly, and it's like weird, like it has lyrics and stuff to
it? Oh yeah, it's got lyrics. It's a song like you would hear on the radio. It's no different. But then you get into an episode and a Klingon bird of prey comes out of warp and the timpani starts and if they're soaring majestically through space and they come across a nebula, there's French horns and like the show is scored and it sounds great. But they couldn't bother with the first 2.5 minutes, I guess. Anyway, it's a long time to talk about the show opening, but I've really been enjoying it. It was a little slow to start, but they go off on they're the first warp 5 ship. So Captain Archer and his crew are basically writing the rules. There's no first contact regulations. There's no prime directive. There's none of that, and they make these little references about like someday we're going to come up with, a set of rules to figure out how we're going to interact with new species and stuff. So it's kind of cool in that regard, in that they're always like, the human's attitude is always like, hey, cool, a new planet. What do you want to do? We're going to land on it. Duh. they don't care. They're like, we're going to go down and say hello. So there's a lot more adventure in that way. Whereas I found with Next Generation, it's like, oh, look, a new planet. We're going to stay in orbit and sensor read it for here. That's interesting. Like it was not great TV, right? But with this, there's a lot of kind of beaming down to the surface and stuff like that. I mean, they leave a lot of the intergalactic or universal translator kind of to your imagination. They turn it on and they show how it works like once or twice a season. But after that, you kind of just have to assume that it's on, and that's why all the aliens speak English. I mean, and everybody knows that if they didn't, no one wants to read subtitles all the time.
Right, sure.
They do subtitles when it makes sense. Like when you're not supposed to, either you're not supposed to know what the character is saying. So like if there was one episode where Trip the engineer and another hostile alien were stranded on a planet together or a moon together, and they couldn't understand one another because the universal translator was offline. So there's no subtitles. They were just shouting back and forth at each other, and the only English was what Trip was shouting. So that was cool. And then there's other times where there's Klingons, and you're not like the crew is not supposed to hear what they're saying. So then they're speaking Klingon, and you get subtitles. And like again, that works.
Oh, okay.
But I like how much aggression there is in the show. Like for the most part,
roid rage.
No, but there's a lot of shooting. Like there's for a Star Trek show, there's a lot of spaceship battles and phasers firing and all kinds of stuff, which I really like. Because if you remember, like this is supposed to be pre Kirk,
right?
And Kirk and the Klingons were at each other's throats the whole time. So here is like it's the beginning of this friction, the beginning of dealing with Klingons. And basically you have to show strength if you want them to leave you alone. And so there's a lot of kind of like, fire, just like stop talking with them and shoot them with a torpedo. So that kind of stuff I thought was really cool. Especially getting into the last half of the second season, there's some, I won't spoil it because it was a cool episode, but there are some cool moments where you're encountering some hostile races for the first time in Star Trek history. Like this is how they're handling it. And you've seen them in other series, so to see the first contact or the first event with these characters or this race of aliens was also really cool. And again, they had to be aggressive quickly. Like it was one of those situations where like, hey, not everybody is just going to be willing to shake your hand, and say, hey, welcome to the universe, humans. It's a lot of kind of blowback, and I like how they handle a lot of it. It does get a little bit repetitive, especially kind of mid-season, where the situation just seems too good to be true, which means it usually is. Like, oh, hey, this guy is going to take us on a tour of the planet. That sounds like a really friendly thing to do. And you're like, yeah, no, he's not. The second he gets off the airlock, he's going to start shooting. And sure enough, that's exactly what happens. So that kind of stuff gets a little bit repetitive. But a lot of if I was going to pick something that was going to rub me the wrong way, I thought it was going to be the acting from Julian Blaylock, who plays T'Pol. Not because she's a bad actor, but because she's a Vulcan. And if they're not written right, then it can be very wooden, kind of very one note. And it's actually been the opposite. She has had some opportunities to kind of round out her portrayal of a Vulcan, and I really enjoyed it. But Scott Bakula, who plays Archer, in some situations, he just sounds like a radio announcer. Like it's like he's projecting for being on stage, and he's like, what, really? You're on television, man. Like,
and he's a veteran of television and sci-fi too. Very interesting.
And it's not like he's got really complicated. Because humans in Starfleet in this is still in its infancy, so it's not like he's rattling off like techno babble that you have to sound sincere, while you're talking about the manifolds and the flex plasma, whatever. Like he's just giving another character order, saying like, "I need you to be on the ship at this time," or, "What do you think, Ensign Sato," or whatever. And it's really odd how off. It's not every episode, but like his angry acting is not great. I still like him as the captain. Like I still like his attitude, and there's a lot of Kirk in there. Like there's a lot of like, I'm gonna reason with you, but if you're not gonna play nice, I will punch you back. Like there's some good stuff. There's some good bar scuffs and things like that I like. A little bit of Malcolm Reynolds, to kind of round it out.
Exactly.
So there's that. There's a lot of redeeming factors as well. But I don't know, like, you don't know what goes into the production of these shows. Like, maybe he just didn't get enough takes, or, you know, maybe the lines got rewritten at the last minute. Like, I don't know. But the only other thing that really kind of sticks out like a sore thumb is how often they put T'Pol in next to nothing.
Interesting.
It's like, it's like there's, I mean, she's always in a tight uniform, right? So, I mean, mm-hmm. she's the Seven of Nine. She's the, what was the
Google
girl?
Google Imaging. Yeah. T'Pol.
What was the next gen? The Counselor Troy, like everybody's in a leotard. Like, I mean, everybody's in a uh-huh. uniform, but T'Pol's is extraordinarily tight. She also has I'm not sure, they're almost like boy short underwear and then a sports bra. And whenever they come back from the surface of a planet and they have to decontaminate themselves because they've brought up a pathogen or a virus or something, and they have to kind of detox before they rejoin the ship, a lot of times what they have to do, and this happens, I think, in the first episode, if not the second, they have to put like this bio gel on themselves to kind of get rid of the germs. And so they strip down and then they're rubbing each other with this shiny jelly. And it's like, and they spend like, you know, 10 minutes in this locker. Nice. Right, you're like, come on. Like, really? I guess what's good about it is that you don't see it that much in shows anymore. So at least we've come a little ways in 10 years of making television shows. But yeah, not too far, but still, it really smacks you in the face of like, really? Who wrote this? So yeah, that kind of stuff is, it dates it a little bit.
Interesting.
But in the second half of season two, they get into some of the stuff that Star Trek does really, really well, which is like the moral dilemma. And I mean, by moral, I mean the human moral dilemma of meddling in other cultures, of, you know, right from wrong, the weight of your decisions, and then the decisions and, you know, like the ripples in the universe. When you do something here at this juncture, like how does that affect, you know, what's going on down the line? And there's some really heavy repercussions. There's some really cool stuff that happens in and let's say the second half of season two, and it becomes a little bit more of a serious show, mm-hmm. Which I like. But then at the end of season two, in like the last three episodes, like almost a year has gone by in like three episodes, like, or months at the very least. Earth gets attacked and they recall the Enterprise and they have to retool it and then send it back out to kind of figure out what the hell happened.
Mm-hmm.
But like it's supposed to be light years away, like tens of, not hundreds, but it's supposed to be like several light years away. So it takes them months to get back to Earth. But this all happens in the course of an episode, like in between commercial breaks. So like it's just,
nice.
Whereas, you know, the rest of the seasons, it's been, you know, they're traveling 5 or 6 light years in the course of an episode. You know, like it takes them a mm-hmm. while to get places and all that kind of stuff. Or that each episode will kind of span a day or two, maybe a week, but like nothing as far as months goes. But then they surpass months in just this one episode at the season ender. So I think they were kind of like struggling with the pattern of the episodes and they needed some big event to kind of propel things forward.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And so they've done that. So like now that I'm past season two, I can see where now the season three arc is going to go. And I think it only went 4 or 5 seasons. I can't remember.
Yeah, it shows. Yeah. And what a bummer. 98 episodes, it says, which if you know the magic number is 100 to get syndication,
right.
That is a real ball buster.
Yeah. That means like, I mean, God, like write a really bad Christmas special and just like get
yeah,
there.
Double,
you,
yeah.
You know, just get there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I really enjoy the characters. The Doctor's quite funny. The aliens they encounter are cool. And they've gone into some of the more esoteric aliens too, like some of the aliens that don't really have corporeal form. There's some aliens that are not humanoid, like they sound like they might be insectoid. Like so, like when they came over the speaker, it's all clicks and whistles. Like that mm-hmm. that kind of stuff is cool because I mean, Star Trek is kind of like notoriously just, you know, people in makeup. So yeah, for aliens, right. You know, just they put a prosthetic nose on somebody and call them a, you know, Romulan.
A Nozlorian or something.
Yeah, something funny.
Snozlorian.
Yeah.
Exactly. Something terrible.
Anyway,
you led me down a path where there's an entire, Google image search section called Topol decontamination. That's an entire section of the images for her. She's a very pretty lady. Anyway, it's interesting because I'm not a big, I like the Star Trek movies. So what's interesting to me is it does sound like had I watched this around the same time as Smallville, which this originally was on UPN, I believe, correct? And did not make the jump to CW. I think that's true. Or UPN in the States. Maybe it would have been a show I would have watched because I wasn't into Next Generation or the original series enough to be one of those people who loved Deep Space Nine, which apparently was very excellent, or Voyager, because by that point, I was still swashbuckling. I still like Star Wars over Star Trek because I love those swashbuckling angles of stuff. But now as a man who thoroughly enjoys West Wing and House of Cards and Game of Thrones, I think I would agree that Star Trek's more like those types of things because you deal with actual political climates, not just wow, we're just going to go space Western it up. But this seems like it sounds like a fairly decent balance.
I would argue that The Next Generation would be a nice thing to compare to West Wing.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, it's anchored by a captain with so much gravitas that you're like, holy crap.
That's the thing, right? That's what brought me to that parallel is if you really enjoy Sheen on West Wing, then I think you'll enjoy Stewart on The Next Generation. The Next Generation first season suffers from any kind of sci-fi first show in the 90s. Yeah, sure. Or really 80s. It's low budget. It's kind of cheesy, but it got popular really fast, and then they got a bigger budgets to do cooler stuff, and it was a lot better. I honestly think I might actually go back and watch The Next Generation after I'm done with Enterprise. It's been so long that I don't remember. I'm sure I'll remember a couple of episodes because TNG was in syndication. So I've seen those 6 p.m. when I was in university. I think that was when Voyager was on, but there was Saturday there was some other Star Trek episodes and all that kind of stuff. So I was able to find Star Trek on syndication growing up easily.
Syndication.
Cool. Well, I've got a quick book pick to mention before we move into the Internet Minute, and that is Art Book One from Derek Laufman. I was actually just on Skype with Derek the other day. We had a few things to talk about, and if you go to DerekLaufman.com, you can find his art book, and if you want to follow his art, it's at Derek Laufman, LAUFMAN, on Instagram. He does a lot of really cool chibi pinups. His latest set of four is the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and they are fantastic. We've been sharing these in the Slack chat over the last couple of weeks as he's been completing them, and he just put the four pack of prints up on his store on Monday. I actually bought his art book quite a while ago. I did the pre-order earlier in the spring, and it arrived this summer, and then I promptly misplaced it. I was telling Derek on the call that I was like, I just opened your art book the other day. And he's like, what? It's like, how long have you had it? It's like, well, I had it. And I thought, ooh, I know what this is. I saw the return address on it. I was like, okay, I'm going to wait until I have a moment to take this to a park bench or, sit down with a coffee on a Saturday morning and really enjoy it. And it's not a huge book. It's a 5.5 by 8.5. I can't remember. It was 48 or 50 pages. So it fit inside an envelope. So instead of a box in my studio that I can easily see and go, oh, yes, right, the book, it was in an envelope that got filed and stacked and things, and it was in my book bag for a couple of weeks. I completely lost track of it until I found it the other day. I was like, you know what? I need to, dig into this. I'm familiar with his work because I follow him on social media, and we talked to him on Comics Coast to Coast back in May. But check out DerekLaufman.com and check out Art Book One. He says he's looking forward to doing another one in the new year. So there's going to be more stuff coming from Derek, but it's definitely something that I really enjoyed.
Smart.
That brings us into the Internet Minute, which is brought to you by you, dear listener. If you really enjoy what you're hearing on The Citadel Cafe and you'd like to help us keep the ball rolling, visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. Anything that you would like to help out with is completely up to you. Doesn't matter whether it's 5 cents a show, a dollar a show. It's all per episode. So if something weird happens, like last week where a tree falls in the forest, there is no episode. So people are not charged on the Patreon for a missing episode. You just kind of wait till the next one comes out. So if you would like to join the patrons in the Slack chat, that's one of the cool perks of being a patron, as well as some other rewards I'm working on. If you have any ideas as well, if you are already a patron and you'd like to see some cool stuff, either a show goal or a reward, then let me know. I'd like to try to beef up the Patreon a little bit. And I just got an email the other day that says the domain registration for the Citadel Cafe is up, and it's the Patreon support that helps pay for stuff like that to keep the show rolling. So thank you very much to everybody. It's called the patreon.com. The Citadel Cafe is where to find everything. My pick is quick. It is G. Louis Land. I think I'm pronouncing that right. I could be completely butchering it, on artstation.com. It's L-U-I-L-I-A-N. And they are a concept artist and background painter and environment painter. And they do some very, very cool work. Everything from like giant mushroom forests to kind of Asian styled, but kind of futuristic or even fantastic castles and cityscapes. Beautiful, beautiful stuff. If you are a fan of fantasy artwork, specifically video game artwork, a lot of the stuff looks like it might have been concepts for video games and mobile games, then check it out on artstation.com. It's G-L-I-U-L-I-A-N. Did you have a chance to check this out before the show, Brockett?
No, this art is pretty pimp. The at first I was like, oh, very, and then I didn't even notice the canoer and what looks like a log flume ride that has run off the trail, like this sweet log canoe thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of hidden gems, and there's a lot of control over like the path of the eye. Like the first thing that you see in the piece that you're looking at is like the pink mushrooms growing out of the rocks, and they're bigger than, you know, rainforest trees. And then you're like, wait a minute, there's waterfalls, and wait a minute, there's like little flute things, and oh, the water's green. I thought it was grass. And you know, like you start to kind of piece everything together, you know, as you continue to look at the piece.
I really want, looking at some of these castles and these different eras, I really want the artist to go Lovecraftian. I would love to just throw an old one in the background of some of these pieces, you know, just have like a giant horrible Shoggoth slogging out of the ocean next to a seaside town or something like that, because these are the sort of paintings that I love to throw up on Pinterest. Not nice. Throw up, but you know what I mean. Yeah, it's really cool. There's even a dragon one, which is really pimp, because most of them are all landscapes ones, but this one's really cool. One looks the fast copy and dragon. Both of them are cool. Fast copy looks like a weird droid that's about to shoot a guy, and then dragon is obviously a dragon.
Yeah.
But both of those are really cool. Those are really awesome.
Neat stuff. I haven't seen much character stuff, but there is some, and I'd like to see more for sure.
Reminds me of the art, which I love. The artist who also does some backgrounds and stuff like that. I always mess up his name. It's Kazu. He did like the Amulet series and a bunch of different stuff. But I mean, like, I love. Right. I'll pull his name at some point. But it's really cool. I love that sort of stuff. It's really, really pretty. Backgrounds and stuff like that. Because at the end of the day, I do love characters and stuff like that. But you do get to a point where you're like, if you just have a beautiful castle in the background, you're like, oh, my eye never gets tired of this. Kabushi?
Yeah. I'm familiar with it, yeah. It's really nice stuff.
So I love all this stuff. Yeah, gosh. Well, if I still Pinterest, I'm out of my wedding phase in my life when I was Pinteresting a lot. And then I would take breaks by like pinning pictures of old ones or beautiful backgrounds. But this would be, there'd be several of these that would be pinned to my Pinterest, which is still a viable way to collect a whole bunch of beautiful art into just one internet gallery if you want a Pinterest.
Yeah. What's your pick this week?
Oh, I just threw out there that it's now gotten to national news. I don't know if it goes to your national news, because the Americas like to talk about the murder rates and then mix it up with crazy stories from science. And this one is near and dear to my heart because the original story was on livescience.com, which I'm not familiar with their website, but the content is kidney stones helped to be passed by a Disney World ride. And more specifically, Disney World I've been to a bunch of times. Love Disney World. I also have kidney stones. Big Thunder Mountain Railroad is a roller coaster that my family loves. Like, it's one of our favorites. And the funniest thing is my mother, a woman, and women it can get kidney stones, has had more kidney stones in her lifetime that she's had to pass than I do. And wouldn't it be ironic, but her favorite ride at Magic Kingdom is Big Thunder Mountain. Yes, she has never passed a kidney stone on it that we know of, but it is fascinating that the study and you know, it kind of goes wider than that. But the original one was a test where they literally made a fake kidney, snuck it in a backpack, and like put in fake stones and saw how throughout the course of that one Big Thunder Mountain Railroad, it would help it pass through, which is really fascinating, that A, they sort of mythbustered it. And then of course the story just expands to the idea of roller coasters in general, perhaps being helpful with the bounces and the elevation and changes and the back of the roller coaster more specifically being the most effective, which I think most coaster heads, that's not what they're called, I'm sure. I think there's something else, but I don't know what it is. But anyway, I think they would agree that on general coasters that are pulled by gravity, the backs are usually the ones that get whipped around the most. So it makes the most sense scientifically. But what's incredible is that somebody did that. And I think as somebody who loves this ride and has kidney stones, that it's a really, really weird connection to see. So yeah. I thought that was really cool. So yeah, there's an original story on live or live. I don't know how they pronounce it, science.com. But then like, you know, I'm sure if you just Google kidney stones roller coaster, you're going to find articles now because this sort of, like I said, it made it to the national morning news, which, you know, they love to slip in their funny science stories with, you know, Brad and Angelina and talk of the Trump-Clinton debates. Like, they love these weird little stories, and this is one that made national news. So it's interesting. It's pretty fun.
Yeah, the caboose passed 64% of the time, whereas riders at the head of the roller coaster or the tests only passed 17% of the time.
Exactly. Oof. Yeah. It's worth it to wait for the last seat.
Yeah. Yeah. Keep your junk in the trunk.
Oh, no.
Oh, that brings us to the end of this episode of the Citadel Cafe. We record live every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern on thecitadelcafe.com. Our mobile audio stream is provided by alphageekradio.com, and the music for the show was composed by Kevin MacLeod. Email the show at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com or reach out on Patreon. That's a great way to reach the show too. Find us by name on Twitter and Facebook or leave us a review on iTunes. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything I am up to online at joelduggan.com. Keep your eye on the blog for upcoming convention appearances. I'm going to be at the Halifax Pop Expo Zine Fair as well as HalCon coming up in November. And beyond that, just my name on social media. Doesn't matter whether you're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, wherever you're happy, find me. I am usually doing stuff. Brockett, where can people find you online?
You can check out Biggest Fan Podcast Facebook. If Joel edited the show, he would have taken out that bleh, but he doesn't. It's fine. It's funny. it's Biggest Fan Podcast. You can check it out. Also, if you check out my Facebook, I'm just Brockett Vola. I'm going to try and do the candy of the day post. I'm realizing as I checked out your internet post that I should probably just Instagram it, and that would be a good way. So you could follow my Insta, which I believe is just Cat Volver, which is one of my favorite nicknames.
Yes.
To pull out. So check out Cat Volver on Instagram or Brockett Vola for my candy of the days in October. And also, besides being on this lovely show with this lovely gentleman, I have recently got a really, really fun opportunity. Me and Kyle Ferguson, my buddy from Biggest Fan and A-Move TV, he and I were invited to be on a show that's like a tabletop RPG podcast where they mostly do a lot of Call of Cthulhu, Lovecraftian tabletop stuff, but they have done in the past some D&D. But we are specifically on a Cthulhu one to tie yet again to a topic I brought up earlier. It's called How We Roll podcast, and it was interesting because it was basically Reservoir Dogs meets Lovecraft, and it was pretty fun. It was got me to put on my actor cap again, which was really fun, and Kyle of course got to keep his awesome voice actor voice going, and it was really great atmosphere with those guys. They break them down into like sort of audio drama stuff. They do some production to it, which is really cool.
Cool.
While at the same time they discuss, there's some mechanics of what they're doing being discussed, but it's not really a tutorial. So you can literally listen to it sort of like, you know, you're listening to an audio cast with a little bit of like gamesmanship to it. So it was really cool. I like those guys. They had a great personality. It was a really great opportunity. So that's How We Roll Podcast and Biggest Fan Podcast and Cat Volver Instagram. I had lots of things to promote this time. That's what happens when trees break in your backyard.
You've been listening to The Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.
This podcast recorded before a live internet audience. To learn how to listen and watch live, visit tunein.alphageekradio.com.